Hello, welcome back to the podcast Hell Through Mental Health Conditions, El Infierno de la Salud Mental. I want to apologize because I was supposed to publish this second episode more on recent events yesterday, but something happened with the recording. The sound wasn't working very well, so I realized that later. Last night. So I'm going to do it again, and I apologize. As I said before, I'm not a professional speaker. I'm not working with very professional equipment here, so I'm just trying to just do what I can, and please bear with me. I promise I'll try to get better. Well, I want to start this episode too with more recent events. What happened after my fiasco with ketamine and Mr. Abraham? Well, after that, I didn't have a psychiatrist or a doctor to go to. I didn't want to go back to the one I had before Mr. Abraham. I didn't know how to go back and say, I'm sorry, I want you to take me back. So I decided not to do that. And I was looking for someone. I was asking around some friends. They didn't know anyone. They couldn't recommend anyone. I called my family doctor, and he said, "Well, let me see what we can do." And the day after, I got an email from his office saying that they had a website for me to look for a doctor, and all the doctors were part of the AH organization that I mentioned before. So they sent me that website. I started looking around, and there were many doctors. And you know, the website says this doctor works with adults. This doctor works with teenagers and adults, or their doctor works with children and stuff like that, and they work with depression, insomnia, bipolar disorders, schizophrenia, different areas of practice. I don't know if you ever noticed this. It is very funny. Many doctors, as part of the information they have in their website, is something like, doctor whatever likes to ride his motorcycle on weekends. He likes to play chess, or he likes to play marbles with their little kids and stuff like that. Or someone had information about being a black belt on karate or one of those martial arts. And honestly, to me, that doesn't make any difference. It doesn't. I don't care if they are a black belt or what. What I need to know is what they are researching. If they've been publishing, if they've been going to conferences, how engaged they are with their area, with their practice. Maybe some other people are concerned about the kind of habits these doctors have. Maybe they feel some kind of, I like him because he does the same kind of thing that I do. But to me personally, that doesn't make any sense, and I don't care about that, honestly. So anyway, I found someone. Her name is Sander, a young woman, just moved from New York City to Charlotte, and I decided to make an appointment with her, and we had a virtual appointment on January 31st, 2022, and again, we went through all my medical history, all the demographics about being married, single, how many kids, what kind of job do you have, and all those things. We spent like maybe 45 minutes talking. And I told her that I was taking Ambien from Mr. A, the ketamine fiasco. And she said, "Okay, if you aren't sleeping well, I'm going to give you something else." And she prescribed Belsomra, or Belsomra, 10 milligrams for insomnia. She said that it was going to help me sleep, which wasn't true, because I researched the medication, and what this medication does is doesn't improve quality of sleep. It only helps to fall asleep faster. That's it, but it doesn't keep you asleep all night long. So she didn't say that. And she told me to take this medication. And she didn't say anything like, don't take Belsomra and Ambien together. I asked her, okay, I'm going to take Belsomra and Ambien. And she said, yeah, take them both at night. And I wasn't very sure about that. So after I hung up and stopped talking to her, I went to the Mayo Clinic website, and I was right. You cannot take Ambien and Belsomra together. And she called me within 15 minutes or 20 minutes, and she said, you know what? You're right. Don't take Belsomra and Ambien together. You cannot do that. And she even sent me an email. Do not take Ambien and Belsomra together. Just take Belsomra. And I said, okay, thank you. Well, I understand. Doctors make mistakes, and I understand that they are human beings. But I think they should be more careful when they are dealing with medication. There is some kind of medication that you just have to be extra careful when you are taking it. Anyway, I went into taking this Belsomra. I wasn't sleeping for the first 3 days or 4 days. I sent an email to center, and she told me, well, keep taking it. It takes time for a new medication to start kicking in. And I understand. I've been taking medication for over 20 years. So I thought, yeah, this makes sense. I'm going to wait and see how it works. Well, after 10 days, I wasn't sleeping at all. I began sending emails to center. She never responded to any of my emails. Never. The nurses didn't respond. The staff didn't respond. So I was being neglected. I was being ignored. I was sending emails for many days asking for help. Well, on the morning of February 22nd, 2022, this is almost a month after my first appointment with this new doctor, I got up at around 5 in the morning because I wasn't sleeping at all. I didn't sleep for 1 minute all night. So I got into my computer and I sent a message saying, what's going on? I've been ignored. No one is talking to me. No one is helping me. What do you want, guys? Do you want me to kill myself so you can pay attention to me? I think that was the magic word, death or dying, because within an hour, a nurse called me, telling me or asking me, are you thinking about hurting yourself or somebody else? And I said, no, I am not. Of course I am not. I'm just desperate because no one is helping me here. And she said, okay, I'll call you back in 10 minutes. And she went to talk to the covering doctor because center wasn't in the office. And this covering doctor, Richardson, sent me to the ER for an evaluation, a deep evaluation. And I asked the nurse, okay, what is going to happen at the ER? With this evaluation that we cannot do over the phone, maybe you can just give me some medication. And she said, well, I don't know what kind of evaluation it's going to be. I have no idea what they are going to do, but you need to go to the ER. Okay, I went to the ER. My wife took me there because I couldn't drive. I didn't sleep at all the night before. I couldn't drive, so she took me to the ER. We were there for 6 hours. I was seen by one nurse. After 2 hours, I was seen by a nurse. She asked me about my medications, prior medications. current medications and all that stuff. And she asked me again, are you trying to, have you thought of killing yourself or something like that, being violent? And I said, no, of course I'm not. I would never do that. Okay, she said, fine. And then after 2 hours, another nurse asked me the same questions. Same questions, nothing different. And okay, I went back to the waiting room and I was there. And oh, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but just to be in the ER, just to be there waiting for someone to take care of you, you have to pay $300. $300. And there is no, can I pay you later or anything like that? No, $300. Okay. And well, after 6 hours, I was seen by a psychiatrist nurse, Mrs. Ornelas. She's a psychiatrist nurse, not a doctor. Nothing against nurses. I think they are very well qualified and they can do a very good job. Mrs. Ornelas spent maybe 5 or 7 minutes with me, asking me the same questions about prior medications that the two other ladies had asked me before, or 5 hours before. Mr. Ornelas didn't do any kind of deep evaluation as I was supposed to have. When I asked her if she didn't have any information in her chart, she was very rude and just said, I have to ask you these questions again. Okay. Ms. Ornella's rapid deep evaluation, quote unquote, was to say that I had a bipolar depression, and that I had to see a neurologist for Parkinson's disease. How did she come to this conclusion after 7 minutes into my evaluation? I don't know. To me, that is a mystery. But she told me that I was bipolar depressed, or depressed, bipolar, whatever it said. And that I might have Parkinson's disease. that was hard to know. Actually, I talked to my neurologist after Ms. Ornella said that, and my neurologist said, no, this is just a tic, which is a movement we do to feel some relief. And don't think it's anything concerning. He said, I don't think it's anything concerning. But Mr. Ornelas, again, in 7 minutes, said that I had Parkinson's. Anyway, Mr. Ornelas told me to go back to trazodone or one other medication. She explained the other medication, but I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. It is like she offered me two options, the blue pill or the red pill. And one was trazodone, the other one was the name. And I decided to go back to trazodone because that is the one I am familiar with. I have taken it before. I stopped Mr. Abraham, but I decided to go back to trazodone. And I told her, well, you know what, I'm going back to trazodone, but I'm really afraid because of the long-term side effects like lost memory, falls, etc. As I get older. And she said, oh, no. This won't happen to you. I never heard of anything like that. Okay. And believe me, I've been researching every single medication that they give me. And very good institutions like Mayo Clinic and Johns Hopkins have information about these medications. But she never heard of anything like that. So, okay, I went back to trazodone. Again, I was rushed to the ER for an evaluation that never took place. It was 6 hours sitting down there and 7 minutes with Ms. Ornelas asking about prior medications. And I don't think that is an evaluation. She told me, what she said, well, you have to see your psychiatrist right away. It's an emergency that you see your psychiatrist. And well, I was lucky because three days after my visit at the ER, I had to see my doctor center. And well, I thought, well, she's going to take care of this, and and see what we can do. Well, I had my appointment with center on a given day at 11 in the morning. At 8 in the morning, 3 hours before my appointment with her, I got a call from someone saying that the center was canceling the appointment. And I thought, well, I need to see somebody else because this is an emergency. And they told me the next appointment we have for you is with another doctor, Adams, and that is going to be on March 18 or something like that. And I was like, well, that is almost a month. It was going to be a month. And I said, well, this is an emergency. The psychiatrist nurse told me to see my psychiatrist right away because it's an emergency. And they said, well, we don't have anyone. It's until March 18. And I thought, okay, well, I guess I'll have to do that. So again, I have become very active, proactive in terms of my own health. And I think many people should do that. Just don't trust anyone who tells you something. I decided to do something that no other clinician had ever told me to do. I researched for a sleep medicine doctor. And that's what I did. I researched, I called my neurologist and I asked him if he knew someone, and he referred me to a very nice doctor, Connie Zhang. And I went to see her. I made an appointment. They gave me, I told them it's an emergency, and yeah, they took me in like within 4 days. And I went to see her and I told her what was going on. And I told her I have my appointment with Mr. Dr. Adams on this date and I'm running out of medication. I don't have medication. I'd like to go back to lorazepam, which I was taking along with trazodone before, so I can sleep better. And she said, okay, I'm going to give you lorazepam and we can wait. And she was very nice. She told me we can work in different ways, but I want you to see a CBTI, a therapist, to work with you with your insomnia. They are certified people to work with patients like you. Great, I did that. Anyway, I was running out of medication again, and I contact Adams. I sent him emails, and I said, Dr. Adams, I need this medication. Can you please give me a refill? And he was very, I don't know how to say it. And he said, no, I cannot give you anything until we meet for our appointment the first time. And I said, okay, it makes sense. I understand that. I understand that point of view. You cannot give a patient any kind of drugs just because of that. But they know, they have my medical history there. It's been 20 years that I've been with this organization during my mental health issues. So they have my medical information there. It's just a matter of punching a button and open up my chart, and it's there. And I said, can you do that? And he said, no, I cannot. You have to see me first. And I said, but it's going to take another 3 weeks, and I don't have any medication. And he said, well, you can do, I don't know, but I won't give you any medication. I was at his mercy. Really, I was at his mercy because he just didn't want to give me anything. He was feeling that he was some kind of god or I don't know what. And he was just, you know, I won't give you anything. You can do whatever you want. We have to meet on this date. And I'll do that. I'll deal with this. I have dealt with this for over 20 years, so I guess I'll do it for some other days. I went to I'm sorry, I'm losing track. Adams. Oh yeah, we were going to have this appointment on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a certain day, and 3 hours before the appointment, someone called me to cancel the appointment, and I was, oh my God, one more time, and I was like, you know what, guys, this is a month after I was told by the ER person that it was an emergency, that I had to see a psychiatrist right away. That's what the nurse said. You have to see your psychiatrist, your doctor, right away. And Center and Adams canceled my appointments with them 3 hours before we met. And I said, well, what do I do now? And they told me, well, we can give you somebody else in another 3 weeks or something like that. And I was, do you understand what an emergency is? And this other person was, yeah, but there is nothing we can do. Wow. Now, I don't know, but when a doctor, something that I strange, really weird, is that they tell you the doctor is going to cancel, but they don't tell you, well, the doctor had an emergency, the doctor had to do this, or the doctor had to do that. So you just assume that the doctor doesn't want to see you, or something like that. I don't know. Now, what is intriguing to me is that they are not really caring. I'm old enough to remember when doctors used to go to patients' houses to see them, to treat them. And I'm not expecting the same thing. I know we live in different times. But there has to be some kind of commitment from the doctors. Yeah. They are doctors because they are supposed to care for their patients. And a doctor could, if there's an emergency, someone who needs to see this doctor, maybe they have a 9-to-5 job at these clinics, or 9-to-6, whatever. But if someone is in real need for medication or something, they could spend, I don't know, an extra half an hour, 45 minutes talking to a patient and say, what do you need? Let's do this. And all right, here you are. If you need medication, I'm going to call the pharmacy right now, and you can pick up your medication, stuff like that. So I expect that kind of commitment from doctors to their patients. But I don't see that anymore in many of them. Some of them, or I don't want to generalize, but my experience with these two doctors is that they just didn't give a fly. They didn't care. Anyway, what I did after that, I did a terrible evaluation of what was going on with the ER, the nurse, Ornelas, Center, Adams. And I got a call from a lady whose name is Crystal Shirley. She's a senior manager for this clinic. And she was very sorry. She apologized for the kind of service and this and that. And she was just trying to sugarcoat the whole thing. And I said, well, Crystal, they charged me $300 for an evaluation that didn't take place. And now I'm going to be getting, how much money more they are going to charge me for this visit to the ER that I didn't need because there was no evaluation at all. A 7-minute conversation with Ornelas is not a deep evaluation of my symptoms. And she said, well, we'll see what we can do. And I don't know if we are going to change that, but we'll see what we can do. Okay, I waited. And then something else happened. Crystal gave me her phone number in case I had something to add to my complaint. I called her because I remember something else. And I called her, messages. She never called me back. She never answered the phone. I sent her several emails or text messages, and she never responded to anything. She just forgot about me completely. Okay, perfect. Well, I decided to complain to somebody else, maybe someone on a higher level position or something. So Stephanie called me and she said the same thing. We are very sorry that we couldn't get you these appointments with Center and then Adams, and I know you are really frustrated and this and that. And I said, Stephanie, this was supposed to be an emergency, and I haven't seen a doctor in over a month. What's going on? And she said, we're trying to get something for you, and we are really trying to find you a doctor or a psychiatrist, nurse, or someone to talk to you. And they weren't just delivering a good service. And I said, well, Stephanie, what do I need to do? Do I need to go to the... Oh, no, I didn't say it. She said it. I asked her, what can I do? And she said, she offered this brilliant solution. Well, you can go to the ER. And I said, do you want me to go to the ER, pay $2,000 for a medication that is going to cost me $5 at the pharmacy? And she said, yeah, I don't see any other way. And I asked her again because I wanted to make sure that what I heard was right. And I said, Stephanie, you want me to go back to the ER and be charged another $2,000 to get a prescription for a medication that is going to cost me $5 at the pharmacy? And she said, yeah. That might be the only thing that you can do. And I was saying, I told her, well, now I see how you guys make money, how you profit from people like me who need some kind of medication. In this case, just a medication or something like that. You rush people to the ER just for something like this. You guys rush me to the ER the first time for a deep evaluation that never took place. And now you're rushing me back to the ER to get a prescription for a drug. Now, again, every time you go to the ER, you have to pay $300. Later, that month, I got a bill for $1,800. So that is $2,000 for a prescription that cost me $5. And this is considering that I am very lucky to have health insurance. Can you imagine people without health insurance how much they have to pay? $4,000, $5,000? We know that health insurance in our country is not a right. It's a privilege. We don't have the right to be taken care of by doctors if we don't have health insurance. As a matter of fact, the last in an article by Harvard University, it says that 45,000 people average die in our country for lack of health insurance. But anyway, that is a different topic. What did I do after Stephanie and Crystal Shirley? Well, I went again to the Consumer Report office. I filed a complaint because of the charges that they were sending me, because of the very low standard of care that they gave me at the ER, Center, Adams, and all of those people. They haven't replied. They haven't replied. They had 2 weeks to reply. They didn't. And in this Consumer Report office sent them another letter saying you guys have to respond, and well, we're waiting for that. But in the meantime, before that took place, let me go back to something else. I went to the Better Business Bureau first, and I filed a complaint through that organization. And this lady that I mentioned before, Crystal Shirley, said that they weren't going to change the charges, because she said, based on a review of your care and your exam findings, the standard of care was met during the visit. Well, I'm really appalled at the standard of care that was met. You might remember that in my introduction to this podcast, I mentioned that North Carolina is number 5 among the 10 worst states in terms of healthcare, and 21 in the country for worst mental healthcare services. And this lady is telling me that the standard of care was met. Wow, I'm surprised. Also, you might remember that in the Better Business Bureau website, this organization, 8H, has a 1.3 out of 5 points for good service, quality service, or good service. I don't remember how it's rephrased in the Better Business Bureau website. So if they say that this the standard of care was met, well, it makes sense to have a 1.3 on that website for this organization. It is really sad that we are exposed to this low kind of care here in North Carolina, especially here in Charlotte, where these organizations treat, quote-unquote, patients with mental health conditions. I just got an article by a very good friend of mine in Merced, California. She sent me this article that is on NPR. I don't remember the name of the article, unfortunately, but it's on NPR. And it is about the kind of tsunami that we're going to experience in this country, because after COVID-19, a lot of people have seen an increase in their levels of depression, anxiety, and other mental conditions. So I don't think there are going to be enough doctors, providers, clinicians, hospital clinics to take care of so many people who are seeing these higher levels of mental health conditions. And they are, again, living through hell. We are living through hell. And I understand this very clearly, because as I mentioned before, I went through COVID-19 pneumonia that almost killed me. And I have seen that. My anxiety levels are going very high. Just thinking about going back to my job and be face to face with students, colleagues, staff, and stuff like that. Thinking about that, it makes me kind of, I don't want to do that, really. But anyway, I appreciate that article from my friend in Merced, California. It is on NPR. It is very recent. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name, but it's. I guess if you go to NPR, you can find the article there. It is about a tsunami that we are going to experience, because there are going to be patients whose symptoms are going to go up, and we won't have enough providers to take care of those people. So I think this is the end of the episode number 2. I hope you enjoy it. Again, this is just for everyone who is going through these experiences by having mental health conditions, or having someone in their family, friends, colleagues going through these symptoms and the hell that we live with these issues. If you know anyone who might be willing to participate in the web in the podcast, please talk to them. It's a very important issue, and society must be aware of how we are dealing with this. We have These mental conditions affect not only the person who is suffering with them. It affects family, it affects friends, it affects many, many people. And these conditions don't have any respect for people of any age, education, background, gender, or anything like that. These conditions can attack anyone at any time. So, well, thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care.